are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth will be told. On the show today, we have Rob Terry. Rob, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. So Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, same to you. I really do appreciate you coming on. The first time I didn't meet you, but I saw you, and you were hard to miss because you're so, how tall are you?
By 6'4".
Yeah, you're 6'4", and I met you at the Las Vegas, Natural Olympia show. Yep. And then as it turned out, because our company actually sponsored the event, then I actually stood right next to you, you and Ricardo. Right?
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, you're even bigger when you stand that close to you. My goodness. So you have an impressive bio, to say the least. I wanted to ask you, though, you said here you're originally from Wales, huh? UK?
Yeah. So, yeah, Wales is my home. I moved to America in 2008, and that's where I came over for professional wrestling, essentially. That's kind of what brought me to America, and I've been over here ever since. We make frequent trips back to the UK, like twice a year, but I've been over here for the majority of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, because I talked to a guy from Norway the other day, in the UK, from where you're from, is bodybuilding very popular, or is it more like the strength sports over there?
It's a pure mix. A lot of people work out there. Everyone's into their training. You do get a mix of people who are into like the powerlifting and even strongman and everything else.
Yeah.
But there are quite a few individuals who are very actively involved in the bodybuilding as well. So, and I was one of those guys, you know, so.
Yeah. I traveled over to Eastern Europe in the late 80s, probably early 90s now. I wrote these training courses for bodybuilding back then. It was Bulgarian Burst, Serious Growth. I had a few that we wrote, and I was really into that side of it. And what I noticed was, you know, their thing over there was Olympic lifting. That was huge.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, to the point where it's, you know, they said that the reason why they focused on those types of events is because those guys were like rock stars over there. If you were an Olympic lifter, and they said that even though they had the information as far as what was the best way to train for mass, they just focused in that area. So how old were you when you started training?
I was way young, probably a lot younger than I'd influence people. I was maybe, I actually came, it's funny because everything really came full circle for me, you know, and I said that in my issue of, in the Iron Man magazine, and then obviously with Generation Iron, we talked about that. But I was lucky enough as a young kid, when I was 13 years old, I came to Florida, and we vacationed here. And I was with my family, and we stayed in a hotel, and I had a gym there. And that was the first time my dad he's not really into working out a whole bunch. He kind of knows his way around just a little bit, but not too much. And, we did the theme parks one day, and I think that day we did a break where we came back to the hotel. We were going to go jump in the pool, but we went to the gym first. And I remember we did some legs, and I started doing a leg extension machine, and my quadriceps just started gorging up with blood. And, you know, I was young. I was like 13 years old.
Yeah.
And, there were probably a lot of influences around that age for me personally as well. Watching professional wrestling, the WWF, and, you know, even the cartoons back then, all the cartoon characters were jacked.
Yeah.
So I started working out and feeling the sensation, and that's kind of where everything sort of started for me. I was so intrigued by it, you know, the feeling of it, the feeling of the power, how powerful it felt.
Yeah.
And then everything sort of started from there, really. You know, I sort of came back after that. I just wanted to know more. So, 13 years old, that was pretty young for me, and a little too young that I'd recommend for other people, but.
Well, you know, the funny thing that you're saying that, though, because part of my tours over to, because I went to Eastern Europe several times, at that time, Bulgarians were dominating Olympic sports. So I was very fascinated by them. They had some really interesting ideas. But one of the tours I went on was actually for prepubescent athletes.
Okay.
There's a lot of information about that, you know. So 13 years of age is actually not too young. The key there is you got to know what you're doing, you know.
And sure.
Yeah, I was actually training after I did one of those tours like that. I actually started training kids as young as 10 years old. But again, right. The emphasis was on calisthenics and right. slash mm-hmm. weight training and not do all this heavy lifting. But
that's exactly what I try and hit home. I don't try and tell them what I did because that wouldn't necessarily be correct. Because even at 13, I didn't have a vast knowledge of what right. I was doing. I was just feeling everything around. The advantage that I did have was that even at the age of 13, from 13 to 14, I was a big kid, you know, yeah. I was one of the biggest kids in my school. So when I started going to the gym, which was around a year later after that, all the big guys loved me. You know, the biggest guys in the gym, they would just say, this guy there, guess how old he is. And, you know, they'd say like 18 years old. They're like, nope, he's 14 years old.
Amazing.
So they would all sort of be super magnetized by me, and they'd want to share their training routines and tell me. So I had an input to all the knowledge immediately as to the way people train and everything like that. But the problem that came with that was somewhat like what the internet is today, is that I was thrown so many different variations of training. This guy would tell me how he would train chest, and then this guy would tell me how he would train chest. So it was really up to me to sort of work with my body and kind of see which routine sort of worked the best, you know. And I kind of took components of what was good and then threw away what didn't. And so that's kind of how I got into that. But yeah, I was no pro at 13 years old. Let me tell you that.
Well, it takes a long time, as we know. But you know, that's funny that how you got into that, because I'm always interested in how people get into it, you know. And like with mm-hmm. me, it was about the magazines, you know, reading all the magazines. This was before, and when I was doing it, was before the internet was getting, I mean, it was kind of popular, but nothing like it is today. So sure. Mine was just, you know, reading about it. I got into it because I, you know, out of college, all of a sudden I was in a worse shape in my life, and I'd been an athlete forever. And it's right. like, I got to do something. And so one of my buddies told me, hey, why don't you start weightlifting? Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was about getting that information through the magazines. But like you're saying, it was almost worse, because as you're reading and getting all these different opinions of how to, it's like, it almost gets more confusing.
Right.
But yeah. You know, and it's like, but the way that you learned it and the way that I learned it is in the end is actually the best way. It's mm-hmm. best to learn it from firsthand experience.
Absolutely.
You know,
I agree 100%.
It's just that making sure that at least initially that your form and technique is right and that you're not getting hurt. But I mean, when you can learn it the way you and I did, that's definitely the best way. Now you can really, now you really understand how it applies to your body, you know?
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. there's so many doggone ways, that's for sure. Okay, so you got started that way. So what led you into, you started training at 13 or 14. Did you play any sports back then?
Yeah, I was really, really into sports. Back over there, I used to play rugby as a kid, soccer, athletics. I was really big into martial arts. Bruce Lee was kind of one of my idols. Again, that kind of transcended, because at that time, you know, you had all these action movie stars again. And, you know, obviously I was way younger than the age rating, which was 18, to see these movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd see them anyway. And that was a huge impact on my life. You know, I'd see the Jean-Claude Van Damme, the Dolph Lundgren, all these sort of characters who were extremely agile, but at the same time, they looked phenomenal. You know what I mean? Their bodies were just, I would look at them. And obviously, of course, Arnold. In the movies, all the elements of, you know, professional wrestling, gladiators, you know, and then the action movie stars, you know, that was such a huge driving force into my mind as to how I thought or believed that I needed to look. You know, that was very ingrained into me from a very early age, you know. And subconsciously, when I started weight training, I realized that was the way to do it. So it was, I was so magnetized and compelled to doing that. It was just, it became second nature.
Yeah. It sounds like that like the definite imprint into your brain.
Oh yeah.
And as I'm curious, you said something that you weren't old enough to see those movies. Is it because they were just, it was too violent in terms of action, or, you know?
Like back then, you know, they got an age rating on films and stuff. Most of Arnold's films were, I think, like the Terminator, for example. I mean, that you know, I remember watching that movie and it was just something else. But that was an eight, you know, you had to be 18 years old to see that. And, you know, me and my friends, we'd all kind of get together and we'd have a video night. And one of the things we do is we'd watch movies that were, you know, maybe a lot older than what we should be watching them. But we sort of had, we were able to watch these films, you know, and they just, they really affected me. The power of the way that they looked. And that's the way that I wanted to look. And that's the way I wanted to be. And even to this day, it's never stopped. You know, I love it.
Well, and the thing about that is you got to have a stated goal. You know, you have to have something that motivates you and drives you. And your story is just, you know, you're saying it in that way. That was something that just, that was it. You knew and you know, you were hell-bent on doing that. I can tell that, you know. After you, I guess I'm curious as to, did you get into then, before you ever started competing, did you get into the wrestling federation?
No, I didn't. So I was a really, really big wrestling fan. So in the UK, there's a big time difference. You know, there's like a 5-hour time difference. So just to give you an example, you know, they have pay-per-views, which would be on, I want to say like 9 o'clock over here. So that's, you know, that's close to like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and they probably finish at like 3 or 4 in the morning. So me and my friends, we're all big fans. We'd stay up and we'd watch that all the time. So that was that. Can you repeat that question one more time? Sorry.
No, I was asking you.
Where are we going with this? I don't know which way I'm going with that.
I was asking you if you got into the wrestling first.
Right. Okay.
You know?
No. Yes. So I was big fan. You know, we'd watch all the pay-per-views, all the T-Live TVs, and everything in the UK. And again, you know, I'd measure myself up to the biggest guys on TV. And, you know, that was a huge motivator for my training. Even in my 20s, when I was actually bodybuilding at that point, because I started my first show when I was 18. That was my first bodybuilding show when I won Junior Mr. Wales. So, yes. So I started the bodybuilding first.
Okay.
But I was a huge, huge fan of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
But what happened for me was I was trying to get into the field of professional wrestling. But back in that day, it was unheard of how you'd get into it. You know, it was very, very sort of, you really had to know someone who was in the business in order to get in there.
Great type culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Today it's a little different. You know, there are so many wrestling schools out there right now. You know, I can name several in the area that I live in, Florida. So, you know, you obviously just do the circuits, and, you know, if you're good and you keep going, you might get called up. But back in the day when I was a big fan, it was just unheard of. So I would send off tapes to America because they had a program called Tough Enough. And my accent right now is very... it's reduced a lot and very Americanized as well. Back then, maybe if I sent the tapes off, they probably couldn't even understand me. I don't know. But I it was one of those things where I was trying to get into the company, but I never heard back. But then I thought, you know, it was really, really important to me to become a natural professional pro. So I just kept on following that course, carried on competing every single year. And then it was just being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
You know, I was at the WrestleMania Worlds in 2006. We were at the weigh-ins, and this, you know, I was sitting next to my wife, and this lady just comes and sits down on the other side. And I was like, oh my God, this may not go well. I don't know what's going to happen right here. But she introduced herself to me and she says, hey, I'm from the WWE. I think you've got a great look. You've got a presence, and we'd love to consider you and offer you a wrestling contract. And by this point, my jaw hit the floor. You know,
I imagine.
And,
imagine.
Like I say to a lot of people, you know, if it wasn't, you know, the natural, I owe so much to natural bodybuilding, because I would have never have had that opportunity if I hadn't have, you know, just been competing at these bodybuilding shows.
Yeah.
Because it was just such the right place and the right time. And that's how it opened up for me. And I got the professional wrestling contract. I met Vince McMahon, did a little tryout in London, which took forever to happen. But eventually when it did, then, you know, I met all the superstars, which is that's a story in its own. You know, I'm meeting the guys who I've been idolizing on TV most of my youth. And now I'm having dinner with them all, you know what I mean? So it was a pretty cool and surreal experience that opened up so many doors for me.
Yeah. You know, the thing about that is you just don't know when you're, you know, how things are going to pan out, you know, the timeline of things. And sometimes you just have to follow your passion.
Yeah.
And then the rest kind of falls in, you know, it's like you didn't expect that. And then
1,000%, you're absolutely right.
Then all of a sudden you're at the right place at the right time. But you know what, if you hadn't followed your dream and your passion, you would have never had that experience. It would have been something else, you know, but not
absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's kind of interesting. You know, I've told my people sometimes, I said, look, you got to be willing to do the work to begin with and follow your passion. And then you got to be willing to open up that next door. You never know which doors is going to open up another door for you. You know, the fact that you were competing in all these shows, that's what did it. And you were found, you know, and I think the show, right, you do have a presence and you do have a look. I'm not surprised that she said that to you, but what an opportunity
it was
to meet your idols, because the same thing happened to me as well. But talking about Vince McMahon, and this is how I met Platts. I wrote like it's a second version of the training courses that we were writing. And I thought, you know, I need to network this thing, and you need to be around the guys and around that environment to have a better chance to talk to them, you know? So I just decided to get on a plane and I flew to Germany, not knowing what the heck I was doing. Well, long story short, I just followed the five guys that were on their way over there to do the FIBO in Germany. Right. And well, guess who was picking these guys up at the airport? It was Platts. And he saw that I looked like I was just straggling along because I didn't know where I was going. And he said, "Hey, do you need a ride?" And that's where Tom and I began our relationship. But at that time, I'm sure you remember the WBF.
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Vince McMahon had that at that time. Tom was the face of that organization during those days. And, you know, of course, I was looking for somebody that might want to, I could, you know, get on their coattails with the stuff that I was doing. And it was Tom. I'd say, "Hey, man, I'd like you to check out my book, and I'd like you to be the face for our deal." He said, "Well, I can't, you know, I got a contract with Vince." And, you know, a year later, sure enough, Tom and I hooked up. But yeah, that's where I met Tom, was at that Vince McMahon where he had the WBF.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't last too long, that organization.
I don't think it did. No, but I remember that clearly, you know.
Yeah.
Again, that was the era when just everything was happening, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember being around that.
Yeah, and then what Vince actually did, which I thought was smart, is he gave all the competitors, I think there were like 8 or 9 guys that he brought on as kind of the first group in that organization, and he gave them like all certain names. Like, what was, did you have like a name in when you were doing your pro wrestling? I'm sure you did, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was very lucky in professional wrestling. They actually kept my name.
Uh-huh.
But they just add something on to it, you know, like Rob the freak, Rob Terry,
yeah.
You know, the Welsh Warrior, and so on.
Yeah.
But they'd use my name, which I was one of the very, very few guys they did that. Most of the time they'd change your name totally.
Like a stage name, right?
Yeah. But I was lucky. They'd keep my real name and then add something after or before it. So I guess, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a plus of me, you know, because they got to keep my name. So.
Yeah. And so I thought what Vince was doing was kind of smart, because he was using a platform with wrestling that was working. And he was trying to make that crossover. And they actually had the right intention for this thing, because they wanted to make bodybuilding and naturally
they make sort of personalities, right?
Yeah.
Out of the bodybuilding, maybe because the industry was very bland, I guess.
Yeah.
With the bodybuilding personality. So he was trying to add the personas.
Exactly.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. And smart.
That's great.
You know, of course, the other thing that he wanted to do was, and the WBF was to be a natural, you know, platform. And it just didn't work out. I think Vince was just too, maybe ahead of his time. I'm not really quite sure. You know, one of the things I did know that because I happened to be during those days was, have you heard of a guy by the name of Mauro Di Pasquale?
No, I have. I might have, but off the top, I can't match a face to that name.
Yeah. And him and I wrote this book called The Anabolic Diet. Okay.
Okay.
And he also wrote other books, A Ketogenic Diet. Is also Mauro, but during those days, it was just when this was going on, And Mara was trying to incorporate and implement that idea of how to utilize the high-fat diet right. To help these guys stay natural. And part of the reason that, you know, in that industry where the guys are enhancing, it's a freak show. And people, there's a small cult that likes to come and see that. That sport, I don't think, has actually grown. In fact, if anything, it's gotten less popular, in my opinion. And I think it's because they've gotten to the point where most people can't relate to that. You know, as big as you were and as great a shape as you were in, I think that people think that, you know, this is something that I could belong to or I could get into, where sure. some of these guys, it was just off the charts and ridiculous, you know.
Right.
But, and part of the reason why I just think that the guys couldn't come in at that time any better is because they really didn't buy into that philosophy of changing the way you eat to help mm-hmm. your body look better. And with that being said, you were in great condition. So how did you get yourself in that kind of shape? Somebody who's as tall and as big as you, you kind of remind me of Lou Ferrigno. How big and tall he was, you know. And yeah. I think the disadvantage for you guys that are so tall like that,
sure.
it takes a lot more work to fill you all in.
Yeah, you know, I'm very realistic with that, you know, and it's extremely impressive, you know, when you do see a big guy who is, you know, fully complete and everything else like that. But, you know, obviously when you're standing next to a guy who's, you know, like 5'10", you know, it's sometimes when it's a lot easier maybe for them to fill their shape out versus you, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
but it's a challenge, you know, I get it. And, it's just, you know, it is hard, but it's just something that I, you know, I'll keep doing and keep trying to add to my physique and bring it in, you know, the best I can at every show I do. You know, always set a challenge of coming in better than last show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am a tall guy, you know, I'm 6'4". In terms of coming in condition and everything else like that, I really try and stay in the best possible shape I can all year round. And again, you know, they called me on TV the freak of nature, and that's basically because I can naturally hold such a big weight. My off season weight is between 275 and 280 pounds, you know. Yeah. And I can hold that pretty easy.
Yeah.
So that in a gym world is pretty shredded. But then when you bring that to especially a natural bodybuilding stage where, you know, the guys are not going to have enormous amounts of mass, but you know, they're going to be in insane condition.
Yeah.
That's the game that I'm challenged at, is to really come down and get every single muscle group striated for that show. So I basically, you know, I normally do a 12 week cut. But this time I did a 16-week cut. So I added just a little bit more time. I never really do a whole bunch of cardio. I try and keep my cardio as minimal as possible. I use that just as a tool. If I feel I'm lagging or I'm behind on myself, I really sort of concentrate on diet.
Yeah.
Diet is pretty much everything to me. It's a macro-based controlled diet where I don't really suppress one food group. I'll try and keep everything in a synergy of, you know, the carbs, proteins and fats and everything will be there. It's all, you know, the best choices of everything I can get. And I'll just add then and constantly monitor it. And I'll do a 5-day cycle where it'll be sort of 5 days low and then 2 days high. And that just works really well, and my body responds to that. I'm able to drop continuously going into the show.
Yeah, when you say 5 days, 2 days high and 2 days low, you mean the amount of calories that you're taking in?
It's carbohydrate based, but obviously that's going to affect the caloric intake as well.
So you're carb cycling is what you're doing at that point.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes.
Do you do that for the whole time that you're doing your cut? You said you're 16 or 18 weeks this time?
It was a 16, yes.
Okay, so were you carb cycling throughout that whole 16?
The entire time that was a carb cycle. I really didn't have any diet breaks. I felt really good the entire time, you know. Like I said, this was the hardest I probably ever pushed. in terms of coming down the lowest.
Yeah.
Like we discussed previously, you know, it was a 42-pound drop, so that's a lot. Yeah, it was. But like I said, it was towards the end, you know, it was a little rough, I guess, but the entire journey of that wasn't too bad.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something that when I was talking to Tony Pearson, I just had him on. This guy was ripped to shreds. I mean, what he told me is this. He goes, he said, I never wanted to be big, like these mass monsters, you know?
Yeah.
Not that he necessarily could. If you take a look at his physique, maybe someday, he had a very classical physique. He's about, I'd say, between 5'9 and 5'10, something like that.
Okay.
You know? And by the way, I think that, in my opinion, the taller guy and the versus the guy who is 5'10, like you mentioned, I think it's an apple and an orange, you know? And I think back in the day, they used to have in actually height classes because of what you're talking about, because I mean, it's almost stacked against the big guy until he
put
all those years in. But, you know, but Tony said it wasn't about for him. It wasn't about getting big. It was about getting shredded to the bone.
Uh-huh.
As you know, when you are shredded to the bone, you can be a lot smaller, actually, than a guy that's a mass monster that comes in a bit smooth. And it's like when they come off the stage, it's like you don't even recognize that person. He even said that. People would look at him after the show and they go, man, you're small. You know, but yet on stage, because he was so, I mean, he has striations upon striations. And I think that's kind of where you're going with this thing.
And, you know, that's, I've been, you know, like I said, I've been competing for a long time. I think in total, I want to say I've ended about 35 shows. So it's been a lot. And, you know, there have been times, like I said, it's very easy for me to get big in my off season and just maintain that. And I've had that mindset before where I'm like, hey, you know, well, I'm 6'4". I'm 280 pounds. I'm going to be the biggest guy on that stage. And that's been my mentality. Yeah. And, you know, I've learned from experience that that doesn't work and it won't work out. You know what I mean?
So it's
you need to bring that insane condition, because if you can bring a combination of the both, then that will make you. But having that mindset, which I think some people do, you know, they'll learn that that's not the way that it works.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I learned that from Tom Platz, because you know, I was training, and this is kind of after I had met him and all that. And he actually took me under his wing. I said, Tom, I've gone as far as I can go as far as the information that I have. And so he took me under his wing. And that's one of the things I learned from Tom. He says, you know, it's better to come in a little bit smaller than you want. Because, you know, I don't know about you, man, but I just, in the off season, especially early on, it was like, how big can I get? I'm 5'10". Shorter now because I'm older, but 5'10" at that time when I was doing this, I got up as high as 300 pounds, you know? Yeah. But so my first time that I did all this and then I started cutting, I did like you did, but I lost too much weight, Rob. And when I came in, I was too depleted, you know?
Right.
So I found that, and again, through Tom, was never to get too far out in the off season. If I could just see my abs a little bit, I was okay.
Sure.
25 to 30 pounds seemed to work okay for me. But that time that I lost 50 pounds for that one show, I pretty much lost kind of my gains that I had made in the off season.
Right.
So did you feel like you, and sometimes you have to sacrifice some lean weight to come in as ripped as you want to be. Would you say that?
So the way that you're absolutely right. You know what I mean? I think, you know, the way that I'll approach this is that everyone is different, you know, and, you know, I'll have abs all the way through being B 280. I'm very genetically gifted, like I said, with that, but I do have areas that need to come down and they are stubborn areas. So in order for me to bring that in, like I said, my areas would be my back. So my back would probably be the last area that would get shredded.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, like you and I will both agree that a lot of shows are won from the back. So I've got to keep coming down until that back is absolutely crisp. And it's just unfortunately that weight will come from other areas. So it's a give or take situation, you know.
That's right.
Either I come in fuller but my back is slightly softer, or I come in where my back is absolutely shredded. And that was the goal that I really had for myself going into this past show, was that no matter what, I want every single muscle group absolutely striated.
Yep.
So it would be rippling everywhere. You know, that was kind of my goal. And you know, maybe that was a compromise of maybe losing some muscle tissue. I'm aware of that. But it was just, that was my goal, and I was hell-bent set on doing it. So
yeah, no, you were in great condition. It's funny that you say how there's certain, you know, we're different that way, how the last part that comes off is, for you, it's the back. For me,
yeah,
it was always like my inside part of my leg. I had this,
right,
that, and my lower abs. I mean, I had to keep, that was my sort of the telltale for me. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, I would keep going, yeah, until that, you know, finally, and it was kind of nerve wracking because it was the last thing that finally came in, you know?
The good thing is, you know that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't know that, you know, it's really important for you to know your own body and,
yeah,
and where you need to really work on and where you know where to gauge when you're in condition. And I think that's what really separates a lot of people, you know? So if you know that, you know, you know, your areas where you need to really come in on, that puts you just ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't really know that, and they're just winging everything. So.
Well, and you know what? It takes again, as a bodybuilder, you know this, you have to be willing to put the time in to,
sure,
to find that out, because you just don't find that out, you know?
No.
And so, yeah, but that was kind of funny. When you're talking about not doing much cardio, how much cardio would you do? Give us an example, like, you know, how many days a week, or how long would you actually?
When I tell people this, they don't really like the answer, but it's probably did 2 weeks of cardio, and it was maybe 3 days of the week. And that was, I think that was eight weeks in. And for whatever reason, you know, I might've got a little stressed one day and thought, man, I need to drop more and I need to drop faster, you know?
Yeah.
But the reality was I was coming in fine anyway, but it was, yeah, just the 2 weeks. It was like 20 minutes. Like I said, for me, the way I look at cardio, and this is just myself, a lot of people, everyone's different, but cardio is a tool for me where, again, I'd much rather start off absolutely minimalistic, and then if I need to, I'll just build on it. Because my workouts generally, my workouts are maybe a little longer than other people's. They're usually 2 to 2.5, possibly 3 hours. And when I do that, it's really not a lot of talking time. I really prefer to train on my own. And when I do, I really isolate myself from everyone else. I'll have my headphones on. You know, someone comes up and I'll talk to me, I'll talk to them, but I'll try and get away from them as fast as I can.
Right.
And it's really, you know, I'm maybe Arnold, you know, back in the day, I know he did a lot of volume. It's,
yeah,
it's something that my body has climatized to. And I've been doing it for such a long time. I'm not saying it's the right way. I'm not saying for someone who's just starting off is what they need to do. They probably absolutely don't. But I do a lot of volume, super high intensity, a lot of sets. So maybe, you know, so an outsider looking in at my training could say, well, he doesn't really do cardio, but he's training for such a long time and there's such a lot of high intensity going on that he's burning X amount of calories doing that. That's the only way I can look at it and sort of justify that. But, it, you know, if it means that it keeps me off a step mill for like, you know, 20, 30 minutes a day, then I'll take that. So,
yeah. I know. Cardio is a nightmare for me too. You know, the thing is, I don't know if you heard of this guy now. This guy was called the Iron Guru. His name, right, is Vince Gironda. Have you heard of that name?
I have, yes.
Okay. I have the great pleasure, mm-hmm, of training in his North Hollywood studio. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. It was, I'll tell you, Rob, I'm going to tell you, to say it was interesting is an understatement. And Vince was a character, man. He didn't believe in doing any cardio. In fact, in his gym,
right,
he had no cardio equipment.
Sure.
And you know, the story with Vince was, you know, the guys that came over from Europe and the guys that wanted to be somebody like, they came to Vince's gym because Vince was the one that actually sort of put them on the right path. And then they would ship them over. They called it to Wiederland, over to Joe Wieder, right, Muscle,
okay,
Mac. Yeah, and they would promote him there. Mm-hmm. But Vince, yeah, with Vince, it was like no cardio. He had no cardio in his gym. It was about,
yeah,
manipulating like what you're doing. But, you know, the thing about it is I think what you're saying is so important. There's so many ways to skin that cat. Because I can tell you this from a physiological standpoint, you know, this is what where I learned at the Bulgarians. They said the key is not to overtrain to begin with. And some people would say you being in the gym doing weight training for 2 to 3 hours, that would be, yeah, severely overtraining, you know.
Sure.
But yet your body responds to that. So it's not
absolutely
necessarily a black and white. But generally speaking, you would say, you know, the Bulgarians said, look, they trained five times a day. Of course, they had very low reps, high intensity, meaning a lot of weight, because they were training for the Olympic lifting. So it was a different dynamic. So they never trained longer than 20 to 30 minutes at one time, but they trained five times a day. And they said, as long as you're not overtraining the system, because I said, five times a day, for goodness sake. He said, well, if you don't overtrain to begin with, your body can tolerate that because it can recover sooner. But look, you know, what a beautiful thing, because you have your way of doing it. And look how you ended up looking, you know, and on top of that, a natural.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, that's pretty interesting. What about I know you said your diet was based on around the macros, but for example, how high was your protein intake?
So again, right. So maybe a good point to hit home is that at the age of 8, I had a kidney removed. So I had an accident about 6 months before I had the kidney removed, where I had a wheel of a truck go over my pelvis, fractured my pelvis. And then 6 months later, I had the kidney removed. So I only have one kidney. So that, you know, a lot of, we talked natural bodybuilding before I go into that with protein levels. But from the age where I really got engrossed in sort of all these sort of figures and movies and professional wrestling and everything else that sort of lured me in to that awesomeness of looking the way that, you know, they did, I was forced only one route. You know, if I was ever going to do this, it was going to be lifetime natural. Otherwise, I'm not going to live very long.
Yeah.
So that sort of still affects me to this day. Because number one, I don't drink alcohol. And if I do, it will be one glass of wine and extremely infrequently, you know, maybe once or twice a year. And that would be my wife to celebrate something maybe.
Yeah.
But in terms of protein levels, that's really important to me as well. You know, I know there's a lot of bodybuilders, natural or not natural, and you know, they really do exceed on that protein level because they believe you know that will sort of get them that one step closer to building X amount of muscle on. So I really measure my protein intake. It's on a daily basis. When I'm dieting, my protein intake is what was it? We were it was around about, it's about 300 grams of protein in my off season. I want to say, I can't remember my exact figures now. I want to say it was closer to 260 grams of protein. And again, you know, it wouldn't come all from meat. It would come from all the foods, you know, like obviously like vegetables, they have traces and everything else like that. Even carb sources.
Yeah.
So I'd be factoring all that in, which would reduce the meat content that I'd be having as well, just to make it easier on my kidneys and everything else as well. So I really have to sort of pay close attention to that and, you know, get regular blood work just to make sure that I'm healthy. So that's a factor that I don't exceed on that.
Yeah. So understandable for sure. Well, but still, even with that being said, you're taking in about 1 gram for one pound of protein.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. You know, so I at least try to cover my body weight and more. So, you know.
Oh yeah. And actually, do you remember a guy by the name of Mike Mincer?
I absolutely do. Okay. Yes.
Heavy duty. Well, I got to know Mike pretty good, pretty well. He was somebody that I was drawn to. I actually I met him at a Vegas show many, many years ago, you know. And so Mike was big on, he didn't think that you needed more than a half a gram per 1 pound of body weight.
Right, you know? Okay. So
there's a lot of controversy about that. And then on the other end of the spectrum, when I was in Bulgaria, because I dealt with all the sports doctors for the Olympic team. I had a really bird's eye view of all this kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And they were big on, no, they said, when you're as intense as we are, you need to eat 3 to 4 grams of protein per 1 pound of body weight. So that was their belief back then. So during that time, it was like Mike Mincer was saying, you know, half a gram. And he was pretty intense. I mean, you know, he did that heavy duty system. And so I thought that was just, again, you know, it's like at the end of the day, you have to experiment on your own body.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
Come into these different shows trying to, and the thing with that sport is that you have to go the whole, almost the whole year by the time it's all said and done to find out if the darn thing works for you or not. So, you know, there's a reason why it takes that many years to get up on stage at the national or world level, you know, because it's just a slow learning process, you know. But, okay, so now let's go back to the WWE?
Yeah, at the time, you know, it was the WWE, so.
Okay, and and you said you're having dinner with all these superstars. So who was it that stood out in your mind that was a guy that just, I mean, I'm sure there's more than one, but there one guy that stands out that, you know, that you met and that influenced you as far as in the ring?
Yeah, you know, there's, and again, you know, it's really hard to pinpoint one because, like I said, I was really, you know, I wasn't just a fan. I was a really, really big fan. So, yeah, there were a lot of guys. I mean, I think closer to the time that I got brought in with the WWE, I remember I'd watch a lot of wrestling and, you know, Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, if you know who he is, and Dave Bautista, who's actually one of the action stars right now. Yeah. So I was a really big fan of those guys, you know, getting into the industry because they were on the way, on the up, you know, they were on TV all the time and, you know, they were big guys. So I could relate to them.
Yeah.
So to sort of meet them and, you know, I've actually got to hang out with Dave quite a few times. He lives here in Florida as well. So that was just pretty awesome, you know, and when you meet them, when you meet these guys that you're idolizing them, you know, when they were doing their thing and wrestling and I was a fan, and to meet them and they're such good people, you know what I mean? That just makes it so much better. You know what I mean? It's
night and day.
It's really cool, you know, to get to know them, you know what I mean?
And
everything else. So it comes full circle. So it was pretty awesome.
So I'm really curious about something because maybe other people have asked this as far as in that sport. Okay, so I think I know that the kind of moves that you guys make in that ring is, I mean, it's highly, well, it's choreographed to some degree, but you have to be an athlete to be able to do that regardless. So, you know, is it fake or is it real? Can we answer it? Can we finally get a black and white answer?
Well, I'll give you a pretty good answer. It's all predetermined, you know what I mean? It's very predetermined, but it's defined fake, you know, like I remember one time when I was wrestling with Impact Wrestling on Spike TV and I took a chair shot to the head and my family, they were never really big wrestling fans, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as soon as I got into the industry, they became my number one fans. They'd watch it every single week in the UK. They'd videotape every single episode and they'd constantly go through with a remote control till they found my match and then they'd show all the neighbors when they came over. And this one time, you know, they saw the chair shot, you know, and it was pretty bad. And I ended up bleeding from the top of my head. Which wasn't, you know, I didn't need stitches. It was just something that happened. The guy hit me slightly wrong and, you know, it was what it was. And, you know, I had to tell my parents that it was a fake chair, but I had to tell my wife the same thing as well. But the reality was, you know, it was a steel chair that you just pick up at Home Depot. So the chair shot itself was very real. It's just everything sort of predetermined, you know, a lot of the blows that we take and the falls, it's you know, it's as real as it can be. The ring has a recoil to it, but it's, you know, when you fall on that and you do your training in the ring, the next day you'll feel it like the first time you probably been to football practice and you get beat up and you got these bruises all over your body. It's extremely physical, and you know, a high risk for anything to happen.
It's
a crazy industry.
Yeah, and I'm in athletics, so I know that it takes to make something like that look is that real, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of practice that goes into that. Yeah. But I wanted to ask you that too, is like when you're going in to wrestle, let's just say one person, another wrestler, are you guys actually training with each other to predetermine how the show's gonna go? Or how does that work?
It depends, you know. It depends on you, on both of you guys training at the end of the day. You know, if you've both been trained and, you know, you've both been working a good amount of time, you can just talk about, you know, what's going to be good, what's going to be good for the fans, and just go out and do it. You know, yeah. it's as simple as that. As well, maybe if you've got a guy who's pretty new in the industry, then maybe you need to spend a little bit more time and just make sure that you don't get hurt and that he doesn't get hurt at the same time. You know,
yeah, so. You know, in the fashion industry, I've actually, since I've gotten out of the sport of bodybuilding, and I won't go into why I got into this, but I mean, actually, I wrote a book to teach men how to dress.
Mm-hmm.
After I got out of bodybuilding, Rob, I just didn't have that. I mean, I train every single day. I'm just an old guy having a good time in the gym now, you know, compared to what I used to do. But I didn't realize how much the stage motivated me as far as my training was concerned, because it kicked it up another level, knowing that you're going to compete with a bunch of guys, you know. And then when you're not doing that anymore, it's like, oh, you know, I kind of like the idea of getting in that kind of shape. And, you know, well, anyway, long story. So I got into this fashion thing, and there's the Italians have a term, because I'm really influenced by the way the Italian men's fashion is. Okay.
Okay.
They call it sprezzatura.
Okay.
Sprezzatura means it's studied carelessness. It's making the hard look easy. And you know, referring this back to what, in the sport that you're in, you know, people that make things look easy, usually it's really hard. And to make something hard look easy is a boatload of work that you got to put into it. You know, if you get somebody who's a newbie that mm-hmm. gets on stage, they're not going to make it look like you guys do at that level.
No. I remember when I first started off in the industry, you know, Leo, and I can't tell you how hard it was. I was always I am still a humble guy. But the thing was, I didn't realize actually how much work was needed to be a professional wrestler. I just thought in my mind that because I'm big, you know, I'm 280 pounds, I'm 6'4", I'm one of the bigger guys in the industry. This is going to be easy for me. You know, I'm going to grab a guy and I throw him over there. He's going to come off the ropes. I'm going to hit him there. And it really didn't work out for me like that. You know what I mean? And I was humbled myself on the amount of work that I really had to put in.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I got signed with the WWE and I was training with these guys, you know, I'd be gone for, it was like a 9 to 5 deal where, you know, I'd be in a training facility and I'd come home to my wife and she was like, what happened to you? And, you know, I would be dripping wet with sweat. And my entire body felt like it had just been through, you know, like a meat grinder or something like that. You know what I mean? It was brutal because you've really got to master every single move that you could possibly do or that someone else could do to you. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but in the world of professional wrestling, a lot of the moves that they do, you know, if someone pulls on you slightly harder than they should, they could easily break your arm. You know, a lot of those moves are extremely real. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, you're trained to not inflict the damage that you could. So,
and yet, show that it's, you know, and make it look very real. Yes. That's an art right there. That's an art form.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I was showed very fast that there's a lot of work that needs to go into this. And, you know, I was at a point where I was so obsessed with it, you know, that I went through everything that they threw at me. But it was a hard road, I'm not gonna lie. You know, it was a really big test of how much I wanted it at the time.
Yeah.
And some guys they fall off that because it's really hard.
Yeah.
Just like bodybuilding would be, you know what I mean? You can't expect to just go to the gym once, twice a week and be a world champion. It doesn't work like that. You got to put the time and the graft in for anything you do like that. It's
like
you said, you're on stage, you're making it look good, you're making it look easy, but there's a lot behind that.
Oh, man.
A lot of sacrifice and everything else that people don't see.
The average person that has no clue, either in the sport that you're in wrestling or bodybuilding, I hear things like, you know, that just looks like it's so hard to do. How come? Yeah, you know, you have no idea, and we're not going to talk about this because you'll never get it unless you actually have to go through it. You know,
right?
And I still have a studio. I've had several studios, and I still have one. I sit in the personal training side of it. Okay, I opened up my own places And you know, and I've had people come through and say, oh, I want to compete. And I sit down with them now and say, look, here's the reality of this thing. Because I know from my own personal experiences that you like the idea of it more than you're going to like the reality of doing this. You know, you said 9 to 5. You actually were spending 9 in the morning till 5 in the evening?
Yeah, it might have been 8.
Every day?
Remember it was like 5 days a week. Yeah, we'd go to this place in Florida. We'd go there. We'd set up a ring. We'd do warm-up drills for like an hour. You know, we'd have like promo classes, you know, talking, you kind of promo, you watch everyone talk, you critique each other. Then we'd have matches. Then, you know, we'd watch videos after that. It was continuous learning, you know, and I was a big fan of the WWF and, you know, the WWE. But if you remember, there was another product which was called WCW. I wasn't really versed with that a whole bunch. So one of the things just which I feel is really important in the bodybuilding world as well is it's great to know everyone who's there today, but it's really important to study the past as well. Sure. And that was a really big aspect of professional wrestling. You know, they really pushed that on you is, yeah, great, you're a fan of today, but it's really important for you to know the people who have paved your future. So go back and study those who've come before you. And that was something that really hit home. And we had to do that, you know, very often. So it was a lot of time we had to put in. And even when, you know, we came home to our families and stuff, it was kind of like being in school because we had homework to do. And then we had to go back the next day and then prove that we'd done that. You know, we were tested on it. So
amazing.
It was a big deal, you know.
Yeah. So when you're at that point, but like, let's just say before you get signed, I'm assuming you got signed to a contract to be a pro.
Yeah.
But when you're learning to get to that point, how can you put that much time in and still work and still make money, you know, before you get discovered as a pro? Because I'm assuming once you get signed by the WWE, for example, now you're under contract. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So what about before that happened?
Yeah. I was one of the very, very lucky people. You know, maybe a lot of people on the independent don't like me saying that. Of wrestling, because I don't know whether you've ever seen the film The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke.
I absolutely have.
You have. Okay, well, that's a really good film for multiple reasons, because the way the professional wrestling is portrayed in that film is very true. You know, a lot of wrestlers on the independent circuit have to go that route, you know, and it's a hard ownership where, you know, a lot of guys, they travel, you know, 200-300 miles for very minimalistic wage to do the show. And, you know, they'll get the hell beat out of them just to get somewhat experience in the professional wrestling world in the hope that one day they'll get discovered. And that's how a lot of professional wrestlers actually made their way to the big stage. And that includes some of the legends as well that people don't even realize.
Yeah.
I was one of the few that was very, very lucky to get where I did on another road. So, you know, again, like I said to you, I tried to send off footage and everything else that didn't work. And then it was just the case of being in the right place at the right time. And then I was trained from knowing absolutely nothing at all about professional wrestling other than everything else that I saw. So, you know, that's where it's a plus and it's a disadvantage, because obviously when I'm taught everything that they want me to, I don't really develop any bad habits, as where all these other guys on the independent circuit, they might have bad habits in the ring and stuff where they need to sort of restructure that. So it's a hard industry to get into, you know, it really is. It's a very hard industry.
Yeah. You know, like a lot of them are, you know, but that what a way to make a living. You pay an awful price. I mean, listen, if it's something that you want to do more than anything else, you're willing to pay that price. And that's just the way it is. And there's consequences for that. And there's trade-offs. And that, you know, most people don't really understand that, you know, that's how in the world, Rob, can you go down that road and get the hell beat out of you day in and day out, make no money at it? What's wrong with you? You're not normal. I bet you heard that a few times.
And again, you know, I relate that to bodybuilding and professional wrestling. They're very, very similar. You know, you get these guys who compete in the amateur shows. There's no money you're going to get other than a trophy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You're spending all this money to compete and everything else. You know, it's just a hard road in the hope that one day you're on a stage and that you are shining bright and you get that pro status, and then you make your way. You know what I mean? It's the same sort of thing.
It is
right there and then. You know,
so it absolutely is.
That's why I have such an understanding of not really what you're doing. It's why you're doing it. It's something more internal than just. You know what I mean? Like you were saying, you're talking to your clients and saying, why do you want to do this?
Yep.
It has to be something that's very, very close to your heart and very, very passionate with yourself.
Yeah, that's for sure. Or you can't do it.
No. You can't. You'll give up. It's so easy to give up.
Yeah. But I talk about, and I do these podcasts and I do Instagram posts, and I talk about this. And I say, you know, the motivation has to be greater than the obstacle. And it ties into exactly what you're saying, because that means you got that passion. You got to be willing to do the work. You got to do that extra step, not just one day, 2 days a week. It's like all the time.
It never stops.
No. Yeah. And who in the hell wants to do that? It's a very small percentage of people that do the wrestling sport as well as the bodybuilding and any kind of sport that has this kind of, the NFL football. Those guys are, awful. It's a big price that you got to pay. So it's, you've got to understand that. And it's hard to do that, but, I'm curious to know the guys that are in the WWE, how important is training? Are these guys are all in a weight training program, and how important is nutrition?
From my understanding, it's a lot more aware. There's a lot more awareness, especially now. From my understanding, the training facility moved from Tampa. Now it's in Orlando, and all the guys, they get assigned trainers. Mm. And I'm pretty sure they have full access to nutrition plans and stuff like that. Although in my opinion, there aren't too many guys in the industry today who are as impactful as they were back in the day.
Really?
But again, the industry has changed. Like, for example, the Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, all these guys who had the bodies, They're just like, wow. I really can't think of too many in the industry right now that have that. It's just.
Why do you think that is?
I tell you a cool story. What with that actually affected was in 2000. I can't remember what year it was, but it's a sad story to say the least. But if there was a wrestler called Chris Benoit. And I don't know if you remember that, but he was a very famous wrestler with the WWE. And at the time, whatever happened, it was on the news. And it was very, very sad where I guess they said he killed his wife. Ooh. And he killed his child. And then he hung himself on his gym equipment, right? Oh my so God. That was a really, really, really big downward spiral for the professional wrestling industry right there.
Yeah.
So that's where there was a really, really strict, stringent placement on sort of being drug tested.
Yeah.
So that's when they started going to natural bodybuilding shows, and that's where they found me. So that was the only reason why I got assigned, was because they changed their hiring tactics. So I think when I got hired with these guys, then I was drug tested like 2 to 3 to 4 times a week. You know what I mean? When all these guys when we first got hired, because it wasn't only for like anabolic use or like recreational drug use or anything.
Yeah.
So they'd screen us constantly. So I think that's one of the main reasons is because it's like natural bodybuilding now, where all these guys in the industry today are tested constantly. Yeah. So maybe back in the day where they were slightly more lenient, and you had these huge, huge guys. It's not really seen a whole bunch these days.
Right. So. Well, wrestling made a good choice because it was going to ruin their industry if they didn't make some kind of move.
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
Talking about guys in China, I'm sure you know who this guy is. You remember Haystack Calhoun?
Yes.
That guy, I know for sure he wasn't concerned about his nutrition. He didn't do any weight training, right? Oh, my. I can't believe that I even remember that. That goes so far. When was that? When they were, that was what, 60s maybe?
I think so.
Holy crap, man. I remember.
Yeah.
But they had guys more that were, it's just like even like with the powerlifting, guys back when they were in earlier days, they came in, they were carrying a lot more body fat than they are now, So it's obviously they have modified their diet and everything. So you ended up in the, What got you into the INBA? Am I saying that right? INBA?
Yeah, so the INBA, that was something that I really was drawn to and aspired to. When I was in the professional wrestling circus, we do some really cool trade shows, and you know, they take a few of the wrestlers, and we went to the Arnold Classic. Oh, yeah. And you know, that I was in my element, because now I'm in the bodybuilding world, and you know, I'm representing the wrestling world. So I in my mind, I've drawn the two things together, and I'm there. Yeah. And, you know, see, I'm just in my element, full yeah. stop. And I went to go see one of my good friends, Jesse Godders, who's a Big Brother star. And he was there with a company, and the company was Vitago, I believe. And one of the athletes that they sponsored was a guy called Kiyoshi Moody, who was the reigning 7-time Mr. Olympia, 6 or 7-time, I'm not sure. So I remember looking at this guy's poster, you know, and as a lifetime natural guy, I'm looking at this guy, this guy looks incredible. You know, he looks amazing. And then I look down and it says his title, you know, natural Mr. Olympia. And right. I'm like, that's massive. That's everything to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of kept that in my mind, and I, you know, went away and I started researching it, and I was like, I've won all these bodybuilding titles and everything else, you know, but like, to be the natural Mr. Olympia would be a monumental thing for me. Yeah. So I remember contacting the INBA and really just trying to work out a time for me to compete, or asking them how I could compete. A lot of their shows are on the sort of the coast of California and everything else over there. So it was just a challenge for me to get qualified to compete at the Olympia.
Yeah.
So I think it was 1 year I contacted them, and that didn't work out because I was wrestling and conflicts of schedule and everything else. And then the year after that, I did my first show, and that was an absolute scramble, because I remember competing in the Team USA's, which was a whirlwind show for me. I ended up winning everything I entered there, and I actually won my pro status. And I qualified for the Natural Olympia. So that was just amazing. And then I went on to the Natural Olympia, and I won my first title there.
Yeah.
As Natural Mr. Olympia. So that was just a dream come true, just right there for me.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you won that thing twice, right? You came back this time defending your title for the third time, right?
Yeah. Yes, I did. That was my third time. I got second in this show to an absolute gentleman.
Oh, man.
Philip Ricardo Jr. Yeah. Him and I have, we've been messaging, you know, a little bit on social media and whatnot. And, you know, I knew he was a nice guy.
Yeah.
Some of my friends who have met him, and they tell me what a nice guy he is. But, it was really cool to compete with him at the Natural Olympia, because, you know, see him firsthand, how much of a nice guy he is and how much of a great representation he is of natural bodybuilding was just amazing. You know what I mean? He's such a good guy.
Totally.
I could really consider him as a brother.
Yeah. I mean, and Rob, you know, the funny thing was, is when I got back into the industry again in the bodybuilding world after about a 13 or 14 year layoff,
because
we did our stuff in the 90s, you know, and, so my first, and I did events like the Olympia, not competing in them. At this point, I had booths and I was promoting my product, you know. So I did the Olympia, I did Arnold Classic and all that. And so my first way back in was to podcasts like we're doing now, because I'm
interviewing
people who I think are just the real deal, you know. And I want to get your views and everybody's,
sure.
You know. And when I was there at this Natural Olympia, I didn't know what to think, man, because it was like something's different here than what it was like in my old days, you know? It's like, then it was like, it started hitting me. It's like, okay, it's about the camaraderie. I can see that the athletes they're engaged with each other. They're doing this for the love of the sport.
Yeah.
And I just felt that. The energy was just amazing for me. And I really believe that you where you're at in this natural movement is the absolute right place to be. And I think that this, it's gotten a lot bigger. I mean, a lot bigger.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that. It's, first of all, you know, I mean, I've competed with quite a few natural federations, and you know they've all been great. But just working with the IMBA, PMBA, and just attending their shows, and just they put on a great show. Number one, you know, they really put so much effort into everything they do, and I'm very thankful for what they do. Yeah. But then you've got all the athletes, you know, and obviously I'm one of the athletes, but it's just I feel like you're saying I feel a sense of community with them.
Yeah.
And every event that I do, there is different, you know what I mean? And, yeah. And I know what you're saying, where you go to shows and bodybuilders are just eyeing up other bodybuilders and there's not much contact. And it's like, you know, it's me versus you. But I have a dynamic on that. And it's like, I'm competing against myself.
That's
for 16
right.
or 12 weeks. Okay. It's just me versus me every single day that I wake up to do the very best I can, make the very best choices I can do in my day to get closer to the goal that I've set.
Yeah.
Once I step foot in the arena or I'm at the hotel and I'm around athletes I'm competing against or not, it's really out of my hands, because all I'm doing then is I'm putting on a professional show to be the best ambassador I can of natural bodybuilding, full stop. But secondly, you know, it's nothing's really going to happen. Nothing's really going to place me better by just not speaking to you or anything like that.
Right.
And that, I think every single competitor has that same mindset where it's like all the hard work has been done. Yes, we're still going to put the presentation on that we have to do, but it's like, we're all a family, you know, and you feel that. So I think that was, we had a huge lineup of 30 guys. And, you know, I can remember from start to finish, every single one of us was talking with each other. We were all having fun.
Yep.
You know, we all congratulate each other and everything else. And it was just a great camaraderie between all of us, you know, and it's been like that for me every single year.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely phenomenal. I think that's what the industry needs. You know what I mean? It's really important to have that.
Yeah. I would say that it's not that, you know, the industry definitely needs that. And you guys are fantastic ambassadors. I never met so many people that were so good for the sport. And I couldn't believe it, Rob, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I was like, this is too good to be true. Sure. And, you know, and I even told Danny, I'm sure that you know Danny and Denise and the whole family. And I told Danny, I told him after the show was over, even before that, because he came to my booth, I said, I want to be a part of this now that I'm coming back into the industry again. I want to be right in the middle of all this, because this is awesome. This is really, this is the place to be. And I'm that guy that came from the other side, you know, I'll call it that, you know, where I competed in those organizations. And I know that the difference. And I tell you what, you and you know, you're a great ambassador. You're very smart in the way that you're thinking in terms of you're competing against yourself. And that's exactly 100% right. You worry about you, because it's a type of sport to begin with that it's subjective. And you're going to have judges. It's like, you know, ice skating and not. And if you go in with any other attitude, that doesn't mean that you're not highly competitive, because you are.
Right. Yeah.
If you go in with any other attitude, I can guarantee you that sport is going to disappoint you, because you got your priorities in the wrong spot, you know?
And, you know, something that was a little different, you know, something that I feel that a lot of other athletes need to work on maybe is something that, you know, everyone wants to work on the physical side. Everyone wants to look great in the day. But again, you really hit that point home where you said bodybuilding is a subjective sport, you know? Yep. And I think so many people get crushed when they don't get that place in that they think, you know, that they deserve. Yep. So what I, you know, people always ask me advice, you know, what advice would I give to people? One of the biggest things I can give is put a goal out there, what you want to achieve, and give yourself that amount of time. Where there's 12 weeks, like I said, it's 16, 18 weeks, it doesn't matter. If you did a show last year, like I said, try and get a goal. Like for me, it was to come in really, really good condition. I feel like I won because I achieved that. That's so impossible to train your mind. Because at the end of the day, you know, win, lose, or draw, you are a winner. You know what I mean?
That's
if you've done that, if you followed the prep all the way through, so many people get disheartened, you know, and, you know, obviously, you know, I would have loved to have won my third Mr. Olympia there. But again, I was up against crazy, tremendous competition. And I knew that, you know, all 30 of the guys were amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really did feel a sense of accomplishment, because I achieved something very direct that I said to myself, before I started my prep. And I think that's what a lot of people should do, is really call themselves out and say, hey, I need to, you know, have bigger legs going into the show. And if you achieve that, then you did it. You know
what
I mean?
That's right. That's right.
Bodybuilding is something more than just, you know, that title and everything else. It's really, it's an internal thing that you need to be at peace with yourself.
Yep.
So it's going to be hard for me when I step on stage next time, because I've got to look at the package that I brought this past Olympia, and I've got to try and find a way to bring a better one for the next one. So that's kind of my dilemma and what I need to sort of come to terms with and really sort of target myself for that next show.
I tell people all the time, I said, you know, bodybuilding, and I was an athlete most of my life, football, basketball, the American sports, you know.
Uh-huh.
But bodybuilding taught me lessons that those other sports couldn't teach me, you know. And so the challenge in itself is what drove me to bodybuilding. The fact that it was so damn hard to do what you're going to try to do for the, you know, the fourth time up there. That part of that was like, okay, this is a huge obstacle, but at the same time, it's the thing that's driving me, because it's like someone telling me you can't do this. You know, I play these games in my head. So, but listen, yeah. I want to thank you for coming on to the show today. But I have to tell you, not only are you an amazing competitor, your body looks phenomenal, and I commend you. But I think even more importantly, you're an amazing person. And
thank you.
The sport needs a lot more of what we saw at Las Vegas, and you're a great ambassador, and I'm really happy and proud that I know you. Seriously.
Thank you very much, Leo. It was an absolute pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, man. You take care, and
happy new year to you, my friend.
Same to you. Talk soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.